Koen Lammers is on the ground in Doha, covering the tournament for RNZ, and once again kindly staying up late to chat with us. This is Koen's sixth World Cup. I think he's in the pub with a group of Australians. Hello.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Oh, it's very quiet where you are. They're in mourning, are they?
Yeah, and I finally found the only quiet spot in this whole hotel. I just left a very distraught Australian bar here in Doha called The Hive, which is full of very distraught Australians because they're pretty much giving up on their team. But then one day they got a bit of a lucky goal to get back into the game. In the last 10, 15 minutes, the Argentinians were just hanging on for dear life, and it was absolutely spectacular.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm glad it had a good ending. So it was a good game. It wasn't one-sided by any means, but, you know, the right team won, etc.
Well, it was a bit when it was only 1-0, everyone, obviously there's lots of chances, but then once the Australian goalkeeper, Matty Ryan, he gave away a very cheap goal, and that really deflated everybody, the team and all the fans at the same time. But then it seemed to be at all a foregone conclusion. If you don't shoot, you can't score. That's what Goodwin did. He had a header goal and was going to go wide. It got deflected, got in, and suddenly the Argentinians were getting the jitters. Yeah. It was amazing. And then suddenly the Australians were throwing everything forward. And even in the last minute of injury time, the Australians had a fantastic chance. And the Argentinian goalkeeper made a great save. And that really kept them in the game.
Okay.
So the Australians could have even snuck into an extra time, but
was not
in the end, the Argentinians deserve to win.
Okay. The game you actually were at, here's a headline about it. A new low, America erupts over World Cup disaster. Is that a fair headline, Koen, regarding the US-Netherlands clash? Was the United States really bad?
Oh, no, I didn't think it was a disaster. They were, I think they were just a bit inexperienced and maybe a bit intimidated. And I've seen quite a lot of the US in their qualifying. And I was sitting next to a US journalist and he said this was a very classic game. The US plays and plays and plays and plays. And they look pretty good and they start with a hiss and a roar. But the moment they can see the goal, then it all just deflates like a balloon. And that's exactly what happened. The Dutch scored out of nowhere, really, because they hadn't really had any chance. They made one great move, and actually it was probably one of the best team goals of the World Cup so far. And then immediately all the puff went out of the Americans. And then the Dutch managed to score another quick goal just before halftime, and the game seemed to be a foregone conclusion. In the second half, the Dutch were just passing it around and just keeping the ball, and the Americans weren't going anywhere. But then they were getting a bit too cocky. The Americans got a goal back, and then it really seemed that the Americans were back in. And the stadium was mostly filled with American fans, but a lot of people saying Mexicans, who just after the Mexicans got kicked out, Mexicans living in the US, they quickly changed their shirt from a Mexican to a US shirt because they all got two passports. And suddenly the whole place was rocking with USA chants. And the Dutch seemed to be, suddenly a bit rocked, but they were able to just go up another gear and get that third goal and put the game away.
That opening Dutch goal is said to be one of the goals of the tournament, as you said, so it's worth looking up on YouTube when they make it available, obviously. Before the tournament, if someone had told you Cameroon would beat Brazil and Japan would defeat Denmark, would you have believed them?
No, definitely not. This is definitely a tournament, A, of upsets, but B, because the Brazilians had already, you got to qualify it a little bit. The Japanese win against both Germany and Spain is very different from the Cameroon game against Brazil, because Brazil basically, like France did against Tunisia, they benched their entire first team and then decided just to give their second team a run, and it completely backfired on them. The Brazilians never really looked that impressive in their in their game against Cameroon, and then Cameroon snuck a goal, hung on, won the game, but in the end it was really semantics because Cameroon still didn't go through. But there's a lot of discussion here whether that's a good idea. A lot of coaches are discussing whether you want to keep the momentum going, whether you want to give your first team players a rest, or whether you want to keep the momentum going. And we'll see in the next round with all the top Brazilian players having a rest and the top French players having a rest. And suddenly they're coming back from a defeat in their last game. how that's going to impact once they get into the playoffs when there's no second chances.
Is there a top team, interestingly, left that hasn't faltered as well as playing well? They just all seem to have.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Before last night, I would have said, yeah, Brazil. They looked really good. And I would have said, the Brazilian bench could probably beat most teams at this World Cup. And the same for the French bench, to be honest. Their squads are so laden with quality that they could probably beat any country in this World Cup. But after obviously seeing them both fall over against lesser sides, with arguably lesser sides, you've got to wonder. From their point of view, suddenly, England and Holland, I think, might look like pretty good chances to go pretty deep in this tournament. And as we saw just before in the Argentina game against Australia, when Australia scored, the Argentinians got the wobbles, and as we've seen against Saudi Arabia, they did definitely not look like the world beaters that everyone makes them out to be. And even Messi struggled to get control of the game.
Sometimes it seems the best part of any big tournament is when all the teams are still in play. You know, everybody's there and there's that level of interest, and all of a sudden it gets whittled down to the last teams, as it has done. Now, I've got to ask you about the Spain-Japan game, with the goal that Tanaka scored for Japan that most of the world thought was not a goal at all, with the ball being clearly out from the views we saw. You know, you rub your eyes and you look again, the ball's still out. And all the former top players and referees saying it should never have been a goal, but it was.
Yeah, it was. And it's really interesting. And I've seen the discussions the last 24 hours why it took FIFA so long to release that footage that was pretty clear, you know, that the outside edge of the ball had not cleared the line. As with football compared to rugby, the whole ball has to be over the line. And the tiny bit of the ball was still, could be millimetres, centimetres, that was still over the line, and that gave the VAR, the video referee, you know, enough evidence to say, no, that goal stands. But from all the initial footage that we saw, it looked really, everybody, including myself, thought, how the hell can that be a goal? Mm. But when you saw the real goal line footage, it was pretty clear. But the bizarre thing was that, it was the Germans who suffered from this. It wasn't the Spanish. And a lot of journalists that I've been speaking to from Europe, they said that the Spanish were actually setting all this up. They were quite happy to lose that game because after Japan went 2-1 up, the Spanish didn't actually try that hard, because in the end, the Spanish were very happy to finish second because it's put them on the other side of the draw, given them a lot better path to the final. They're avoiding Holland, they're avoiding Brazil, they're avoiding Argentina. Obviously, Germany got eliminated, so that's another big team that they could possibly meet later on, and instead they're now playing Morocco and Portugal in the quarterfinal, which they probably prefer compared to Brazil or Argentina.
Okay, you're talking up France, I notice. Brazil are still firm favourites with the bookies. Should they be?
Yeah, I think so. I think the game against Cameroon, like I said, with the second team, was a bit of a blip. And if you saw how they controlled those first two games and the quality they have, I still think they haven't really got out of first gear. And it's more the mental aspect. We haven't seen what the Brazilian team does when they're really under pressure. And that's the beauty of the World Cup. Once you get to the playoff matches, like we saw tonight with Argentina against Australia, which Australia is so far removed as far as quality from Argentina. But when it's suddenly there's only one goal in it and you start just launching the ball into the box and there's a couple of big Aussies throwing their weight around, suddenly football becomes a very simple game, and it doesn't matter how good you are, you can have a Messi in your team. Suddenly you got to just fend for your life, and when that happens to Brazil, we'll find out how much metal they'll have.
Don't have time to go through all the interesting matchups ahead, but the wonderful Asian teams that have been the giant killers so far, they seem to have come out at halftime and gone hell for leather, whereas some of the Northern European teams seem to love the ball too much. Someone gave me that phrase through the week. They hang on to it without much effect.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's hanging on to the ball so much, but I think it's more calculated football, literally waiting for what the score is in the other game at halftime. What do we need to do? You know, some of those European teams have another gear, or a lot of teams, not just the Europeans, have another gear. And in those third games in a group scenario, they just play as much as they have to just to get the result that they need to. And then at halftime, they know what they need to do and they go, oh, we really need to step up here. And then they go into another gear. And some teams have that other gear and some teams don't. What this World Cup does have delivered, which is absolutely fantastic, I think, is, you know, having three. Now, we've got three Asian teams, two African teams. We've got two South American teams. We had one North American team until they obviously lost to Holland. So it's really starting to become a beautiful reflection of world football, and not just having, you know, 10 European teams and six South American teams in there. I think it's a real good reflection that football's, the gaps are closing, as they always talk about. It's a real cliche, but in football, it has been happening for the last 10 years or so. But now, teams from Asia pushing through into second round. But now the big question is, can they push through? Now, lots of teams from Asia and from Africa have gone to the second round. Some have made it to the quarterfinal, but, you know, making it to the semifinal, that seems to be the holy grail. Cameroon got very close in 1990 and got beaten. They were 2-0 up against England. And England made this amazing comeback. So now we'll see. Maybe one of the Africans or one of the Asians is gonna push all the way through. And I think that's the biggest fright for England. England on paper look one of the best teams at the World Cup, but they're playing Senegal. And as we've seen in this World Cup, Senegal can be extremely hot and extremely cold. And when African teams, when they really get their mojo on and they get into the swing of a game, then they could beat anyone.
I got to go, but just quickly, you say we've talked before about the gloss coming off this tournament in all the other respects, but you say the 2030 World Cup venue announcement will be a pointer?
I think so, yeah. There's a lot of conjunction around whether or not. I think there was a story I saw about a shared World Cup between Italy and Saudi Arabia, which just seems outrageous. But, you know, these days, nothing's outrageous anymore. Big tournaments get shared between confederations. They get shared between different countries. So anything could happen. But after all the drama that FIFA have had and world football had to deal with here in Qatar with off-field issues, I would be very surprised if the Saudi bid would be successful.
Oh, it'd be interesting to see. Thank you very much, Kun. Good to talk with you, and we shall again. Kun Lammers reporting for us from the World Cup.